I think I've already shared with you in previous years, one of the problems we have when we come back from Argentina is working out how to greet people, because over there you kiss everybody, and sometimes here you don't even say hello to people. Well, another one of the problems is how to dress. But it's always better to be overdressed than underdressed, I guess. And if Peter were here this morning, and he's not, he's escaped from my criticisms, I'd make a comment about him being underdressed, but who am I to judge? So forgive me for overdressing this morning. Who is my neighbour in the global village? We all know the passage so well, don't we? We're all so familiar with the parable of the Good Samaritan. But let's look at it again this morning. It's about two religious men who were walking along a road and saw somebody in need. A man who had been beaten by robbers and left for dead by the side of the road. And it's a story Jesus tells in the context of a conversation. A conversation with another religious man. A teacher of the law. Or perhaps your Bible says a lawyer. But what it's saying is a teacher of the Jewish law, somebody who's an expert in the Jewish law. And this person comes to Jesus and he has a question for Jesus. Or perhaps he wants to test this new teacher. Whatever, he comes to Jesus and he says, "How can I inherit eternal life?" And in typical Jesus fashion, he doesn't give him a straight answer. Jesus asks a question. Jesus answers his question with another question. What is written in the law? And the lawyer, who knows the Jewish law, gives a correct answer. Part one and part two. From Deuteronomy and Leviticus, he gives a correct answer. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And part two, you will love your neighbour as you love yourself. And Jesus says, you have answered correctly. Do this and you will live. But the lawyer's not satisfied. Perhaps he wants to push Jesus further. Or perhaps he wants to make sure that he's right with God. He wants to dot every I and cross every T. He wants to justify himself. So he asks a technical question. Well, who is my neighbour? And then again in Jesus' fashion, Jesus' typical fashion, he doesn't answer the question straight. He tells a story, a parable. Now we're familiar with the parables of Jesus, aren't we? The parables of Jesus are tricky little stories. They're like a mirror. Jesus holds up a mirror to the person who asks him the question, and the person who asks the question normally at the end of a parable finishes feeling pretty uncomfortable. Finishes up seeing themselves in a mirror, maybe in a way that they don't like to see themselves. Or maybe they see an answer crystal clear that they hadn't anticipated. So Jesus tells this story, holds up the mirror to the lawyer who asks the question. And the story goes like this. There were two religious men who were walking along the road, first a priest and then a Levite. Committed evangelical Christians. Well, not quite. Committed Jewish believers. And they saw a man by the side of the road who'd been beaten by robbers and left for dead. Now perhaps they thought the man was dead, or perhaps they thought the man might die. But they both had a good reason not to touch the man, because they knew that if they touched a dead body, they would be religiously unclean. And so, with a good religious reason not to touch the dead body, these two good religious people walked by on the other side of the road. And then along came a heretic, an apostate, a religious enemy of the Jews. And he too had the same reason not to touch the man. He too knew that he would be unclean if he touched a dead body. But he saw a need. He knew that he was in a position to do something about it. He took responsibility for the need, and he acted and helped that man. He helped that man at personal cost. I'm sure he was going to an important meeting in Jericho, but he stopped and he took time, a lot of time, to help the man. He took the man to an inn and he paid a few weeks' lodging at the inn, and he promised more if more were needed. He would have got blood and dirt on his clothes as he helped this man. He gave him food and drink. He paid a cost to help this man. But he did it because he understood the law better than the lawyer. Because he understood not only the letter of the law, but also the spirit of the law. He understood how the law should be interpreted. And then Jesus turns it around at the end of the story. The man had said, "Who is my neighbour?" And Jesus says, "Who was neighbour to the person in need?" Who is my neighbour is sort of, I will choose who my neighbour is. And Jesus turns it around and said, "Who found himself neighbour to somebody in need?" And the expert in the law couldn't bring himself to say the Samaritan, the heretic, the apostate. And so he gives a better answer: the one who had mercy. The one who had mercy. And Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." We lose the impact today, don't we? 2,000 years later of this story. Because one thing about the world that this story comes from is that nobody knew the face of somebody they hadn't met. They didn't have television or photographs, nor did they have radio. People would have known a few hundred people, and maybe if you lived in Jerusalem, you would have known a few more faces. But it was a very, very small world. And working out who your neighbour is would have been less difficult than it is today. So who is my neighbour in the global village? I'm going to introduce you to some of your neighbours, some of your Argentine neighbours. Very quickly, for those of you who may not know our story, we left 12 years ago. St Alfred's is our home church. We left 12 years ago to work with university students in Argentina. We left 12 years ago to work with university students. In the last 4 years, I've also been pastor of the Anglican Church in Tucumán in northern Argentina. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about the world we live in today and Argentina. Have a look at this list of words. Let me read out to you this list of words. Email, Abu Ghraib, Google, 9/11, postmodern, SMS, global warming, Al-Qaeda, MSN, mobile, millennium, broadband, Yahoo, Steve Irwin, dial-up, Bin Laden, modem, laptop, children overboard, snail mail, Sharia law, wireless, GPS, make poverty history, Costello, G20, Costello. What do these words have in common? Sorry? We know what they mean, yes? And they're recent. If you saw these words in the paper today, you would know what they meant. And if you saw these words in the paper 12 years ago, before we left for Argentina, you either wouldn't know what they meant, or they would mean a different thing. 12 years ago, for most people, a wireless was something you plugged into the wall to listen to the radio. These words are new words in their sense that we read them today in the last 12 years. And these words talk about the global village, don't they? They talk about the shrinking world that we live in. Now, there are some odd ones out. Steve Irwin, Children Overboard, Costello and Costello are Australian words. But apart from the Australian ones, if you went to Tucumán in northern Argentina and you spoke to Spanish-speaking university students who do not speak English and who do not have computers, do not own computers, they know these English words. They know these English words because that's the world we live in. We live in a global village, a shrinking world, where these words are symbolic of things that Spanish-speaking uni students in Tucumán know about. Even though they don't have a computer at home, they know these words. 3 months ago, Andy and I went bushwalking. There wasn't much bush because we were above the tree line. The top photo is a cheat, actually. That's not where we went. The top photo is southern Argentina where we visited, but we didn't climb those peaks. The bottom photo is where we went bushwalking, and in the background is the peak that we wanted to get to. It's called the Clavijo Tucumano. It's the highest peak in Tucumán, in the province of Tucumán, and it's 5,500 metres high. Now, when you go above 3,000 metres, you get altitude sickness, or you suffer from the effects of altitude. So you're very keen to know how fast you're climbing, for safety reasons and also because you're pretty exhausted. You take 10 or 20 steps and then you stop and have a rest. So we took a GPS with us. A GPS is a little device that you can hold in the palm of your hand, and it tells you how far you've climbed in the last 20 minutes. You turn it on and it gets in touch with 3 or 4 satellites, and it tells you within 10 metres where you are on the face of the planet. And for our purposes, it tells you how many vertical metres you've climbed in the last 20 minutes, because you're pretty tired, and really what you want to know is, how are we going? It's a long way up there. In 1994, when we left for Argentina, it used to take about 3 weeks for a letter to get from Argentina to Sydney, to CMS in Sydney, and say the letter was asking whether we could buy a washing machine or something like that. And then it would take about 3 weeks for the answer to get back from Sydney to Argentina, after perhaps 3 weeks of committee meetings in Sydney. So that's how long it took communication between us in Argentina and CMS in Sydney. And very early in that time, in the first few months in Buenos Aires, I wrote one of those letters to CMS and I said, perhaps it would be a good idea for CMS to think about using email as a means of communication. That's just 12 years ago. So who is my neighbour in the global village? The next slide is Pedro. Pedro is a member of our church in Tucumán. He's a lovely guy. Well, I think he's a lovely guy. He's the sort of guy, he's been married to Mari for 30 years, although they're not actually married, they're living together, they have children. But she's married to another man who left her 30 years ago, and because of Argentine bureaucracy, she can't divorce him. So they're sort of effectively married, and we're hoping that they will be divorced soon so that they can formally get married. Although Pedro comes to me every couple of months and he says, I can't marry that woman. I don't want to marry that woman. I can't. In his worst moments. Who is my neighbour in the global village when it costs less time and money to talk to Pedro on the phone for an hour from here than it does to visit my mother in Williamstown? The next slide is Tim. Many of you know Tim. Tim and Ben, our oldest sons, study in the Bellew Library at Melbourne University. They study with a computer, not connected to anything by wire, They sit at their computer doing their work. Who is Tim's neighbour when his friend Analia, who lives in Tucumán, goes into the Yictus University Centre, sits down at a computer and logs on, and a little window pops up on Ben and Tim's computer saying, Analia is now online. And they write and they say, good morning, Analia, and she says, no, it's good afternoon. And they have a live conversation. Who are Ben and Tim's neighbours when they can talk live with Analia more easily than they can visit their parents in Mount Albert? This is Betty. Betty is a member of the vestry at our church in Tucumán. Betty's wrestling with some issues within the church in Tucumán. Who is Betty's neighbour when she can write me an email that arrives in 15 seconds more easily and more cheaply than she can talk to anybody else in the world about the issue? On the one hand, so much is changing. The world is shrinking. We live in a global village. But on the other hand, some things aren't changing. Thanks, Ian. According to UNICEF, 30,000 children die every day because of poverty-related causes. Every day. Half the world, nearly 3 billion people, live on less than $2 a day. Christian and Alejandra and their children are members of the church in Tucumán. They live on 500 pesos a month. That's 200 Australian dollars a month. That's $6.66 a day. That's $1.33 per person per day. Christian and Ale have been together for about 6 years now, since the birth of their first child. Christian is a weekend alcoholic, binge drinking at the weekends. They love each other. They're good friends. They became Christians about a year and a half ago in the church in Tucumán. And as we've encouraged them, we've encouraged them to think about getting married. And Christian has not been sure that he could take on the responsibility that that implies. Ale is not sure, has not been sure, that she could commit herself to life to this person who she loves, who's her good friend when he's sober, but who gets drunk at the weekends and who she really finds revolting when he's in that state. Christian found a job at the Yictus University Centre for the first time in his life, a full-time paid job that helped his dignity, that helped his addictions, that gave him an environment that was encouraging to his faith. And just a few months ago, they were married. These are your neighbours. These are your neighbours because you have encouraged these people. And part of what I'm here for this morning to say is thank you. Thank you on behalf of these people, because through your prayers and through your money, your support for CMS, your support for ourselves, you have sent us there to encourage these people. On our behalf and on behalf of them, thank you for being neighbours to these people. Let me introduce you to some more of your neighbours in Tucumán. Ah, this is Christian and Ale's lounge room, kitchen, dining room, playroom, whatever you want to call it. It's a rough concrete floor. Just recently he's been able to buy some new corrugated iron for the roof that you can see there. On the right, there's a wall, and on the other side of that wall is their bedroom with a sort of curtain half-wall divider between where the parents sleep and where the three children sleep. They live on a long, narrow block of land with about 18 people, all extended family of Alejandra, who do not like Christian, did not want them to get married, but they can't afford to move out. They share a toilet with the house at the front of their house. That's the situation they live in. Christian at work at Ictus, where he's worked full-time as a waiter for his 500 pesos, which is the market rate for an unskilled person like a waiter in Tucumán. It's an abuse of the worker, but it's market rates. And Ictus can't afford to pay more than market rates yet, so the choice is the staff will be paid market rates or Ictus will close. And so the staff elect to stay with the hope that Ictus will make profits and be able to pay better than market rates, that Ictus will be able to pay fair rates, which are probably about double market rates. The congregation of the church at Tucumán, as I said, we went to work with university students, but in the last 4 years I've been pastor of this church. This is the congregation. Betty provides for her family because Ruben can't get a job. He's a long-distance bus driver. He has an outstanding court case against one of the long-distance bus companies in Tucumán. He's won the court case a number of times, but it keeps going back to court because the company keeps employing lawyers to take it back to court, to appeal the judgment, and it's doubtful whether he will ever win his court case. And because he's got a court case against that company, no long-distance bus company in Tucumán will take him on. In Argentina, sorry. No long-distance company in Argentina will take him on. So Betty provides for their family. Alberto is a fun-loving, competent master builder who can't hold down a job. He's irresponsible, he has addictions, he has a wife, Viviana, and they have 5 children. At the beginning of every school year, Viviana is not sure how she's going to find shoes to put her kids in to go to school, or how she's going to pay for the pens and paper and whatever else the kids need to go to school. Part of the congregation at the church in Tucumán. Robert is also a member of the congregation. He's an alcoholic. He's found a loving environment that he enjoys being in at the church in Tucumán. Some of the young people on a bushwalk, when some Australian young people visited us, about 30 of the congregation in Tucumán are university students. They're all first generation university students. Thanks, the next 3 slides too are young people. They're first generation university students. Hopefully they will pass. Average time to finish a degree over there is 8 years. While university education is free, their parents still have to support them, obviously. The rest of the congregation in Tucumán are families where none of the parents in those families have finished secondary school. We're encouraging some of them, like Christian and Ale, like Viviana, to finish secondary school and to encourage their children to finish secondary school. These are your neighbours in Tucumán. A little about the Ictus University Centre, the second version of Ictus, which some of you have been part of encouraging financially. It's meant to be a self-sustaining operation after 1 year of operation. It's been going just over a year. It's not self-sustaining. The good news is that it's 80% self-sufficient, but those of you who are quick with figures will know that that means there is a 20% headache. The 20%, which is deficit, is being met by donations from Friends of Ictus. We hope it will be self-sustaining within 6 months or so. Ictus ministers to university students' basic needs. It provides a library, bookshop, residence upstairs for 9 guys. It provides decent meals at a very low cost. It provides computer and internet access. It provides an air-conditioned space where students can study without paying anything, remembering that most students don't have a place to study. Many of them come from out of town and live in very, very primitive conditions. So Ictus is trying to meet students' needs, spiritual needs in terms of Bible studies, evangelistic activities, video debates, and all of the practical needs that I've just mentioned. These students are dressed up for the World Cup, the Soccer World Cup, which we showed at Ictus on the big screen. You can see they're keen Argentina supporters, obviously. And the anxiety as they play Germany, and the pain as Argentina bows out of the World Cup. It was a difficult moment. Luckily, Argentina didn't play Australia. Gabriel, the cook at Ictus, Gabriel and his offsider Jose have both work full-time in the kitchen. They were both converted through another church that ministers to drug addicts. And they found, again, for the first time in their lives, they found a stable, full-time job in an environment that encourages them as new Christians. These are your neighbours in Tucumán. And finally, Roberto and Iris, advertising the T-shirts that Ictus sells to cover the deficit. Iris was a member of the first church we attended in Tucumán 12 and a half years ago, before the Anglican Church arrived. She was 16 at the time, leading services then, so she's been with us ever since. For 2 or 3 years she worked half-time with me as a sort of private secretary, if you like, running camps and that sort of thing. She's graduated as an executive secretary. She went into Ictus as the second in charge, but last Monday the manager, who'd been struggling with various issues of management, stepped aside, and she's now running Ictus with an accountant who's doing the financial side of things. Roberto, a member of the church in Tucumán, again, stable full-time employment in Ictus. He's not, he doesn't have any training in anything. He's quite a good waiter. He's also not quite so good, but he's also a welder and a jack of all trades. I got him to do some welding for me, and I wasn't too happy about the quality of the work, but he works in Ictus as, if you like, the head waiter in Ictus. These are your neighbours in Tucumán. On behalf of them, on behalf of ourselves, thank you for encouraging us in this 12 years, and thank you for being neighbours to these people. Jesus asked, which of these three do you think was a neighbour to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Jesus told him, go and do likewise.